sounds of a choir in Lviv this morning. Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley. And Joe, there was a nationwide air alarm, but that didn't stop the songs, did it?
Yeah, Bob, good afternoon. Today is another big holiday here in Ukraine. It's called the Feast of Jordan. It's part of the Christmas season. And so that music today was during the air alarm at the Monastery of St. Michael. And the churches were filled today, almost as much as they would be for Christmas Day, because it is one of the main Ukrainian holidays, especially here in the West, commemorating the baptism of Christ. And so you see, it's sort of Christmas here is really the reverse of how it is in the rest of the world. It goes through the doldrums of January, and especially in the wartime, it keeps people's spirits up. Sort of far away, removed from the commercial holiday of the West. Here, it really is about these rituals, about family and community, and some values that people really are taking seriously now. But as I went into that church today during the alarm, and the choir was of the monks there was so loud, and they're all different ages standing up in the church. And I realized that if there was an explosion somewhere in Lviv, unless it was very close, I would not be able to hear it. And so it's these moments where, you know, I felt a strange peace there, standing with everyone, sort of in defiance of whatever the Russians might do. In the end, it turned out it was calm, and it seems that the alarm happened because there was Russian aircraft activity in Belarus, but no incursions into Ukraine.
Unbelievable, the spirit of the Ukrainian people. Joseph, do we know anything more about the investigation into that helicopter crash?
No, there's nothing more yet, no.
And I guess from what I saw on the news last night, there's still no indication of any kind of sabotage or Russian attack, but the investigation is ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just starting, and, you know, I think with all the other moving pieces, you know, it might be difficult to figure it out. There is, you know, we're still in... always these moments. I mean, I'll put it this way. I mean, it's calm in much of Ukraine right at the moment, except for, of course, as always, along the front lines in Donbass and down in Zaporizhia. The city of Nikopol was bombarded, as it is every night, last night. Over the past 24 hours, there's now that the Russians have Soledar in Donbass, there's a town called Volodar, which they've bombarded continuously over a 24-hour period. Interestingly, those names sound similar, Volodar and Soledar, because Soledar means gift of salt, and Volodar means gift of coal. And it really underscores that region, how rich it is in resources, and probably that's one reason why Russia, you know, wants to conquer that territory. But as those battles continue, there's not a lot of missile strike activity happening. And there are, you know, increasingly people are wondering, will there be some new Russian offensive, especially coming down from Belarus in the north, that same country where the aircraft activity was happening earlier today. And in the past 24 hours, the president of Latvia, he said that Russia is preparing a new offensive. And because of that, the little tiny nation of Latvia is sending Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, helicopters, machine guns, and drones to Ukraine.
I was reading about a Ukrainian official's plea about what he termed Ukraine war fatigue. A big concern of this person's was that as the war goes on, and in next month it'll be a year, right, that there is growing concern that the rest of the world, the West, will forget about it, that it won't be in the top headlines anymore, unless you have a tragedy like you did with the helicopter crash. How worried are you about that, and what do you hear about this business of Ukraine war fatigue?
Well, Bob, there's even war fatigue here, of course, and I was talking with an American journalist yesterday. I hadn't seen this journalist since before the full-scale invasion in February. And the reporter told me that the people who she met before the war, when she meets them now, they're totally different. She's, you know, like Ukrainian celebrities and personalities who were, you know, popular entertainers and very easygoing now break down into tears, even in talking with the press. And so there's a war fatigue for the people here. Then, you know, I mentioned Latvia. You look at, and I was meeting with the Polish officials a few days ago. there's fatigue, but then there's also a realization that if you pause, if you relent, that will embolden Russia. And you know, Russia warned the West again, once again, of escalation. They say if more intense weapons do come to Ukraine, if you know, longer range weapons, offensive weapons, Russia says it's going to escalate. But I think if we look at these past 11 months, you know, Russia has been doing everything in its power to win. And they'll escalate whenever they want to, whenever they're able to. And right now, it seems that they are preparing, you know, they're sort of preserving their resources and preparing for something new. But that escalation will happen no matter what. And so this is, again, especially these countries, not just Ukraine, but Eastern European countries who understand Moscow well, say now is the time, while Russia's preparing, to fortify Ukraine and be prepared. And today, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, is in Berlin meeting with the new German Minister of Defense. And it's an interesting dance that's happening there, because Washington wants Germany to allow countries like Poland to give these German-made tanks to Ukraine. But then Germany says to Washington, well, why don't you give your amazing Abrams tanks to Ukraine? And there is there's an impasse there. And that's what's being sorted out these days.
Interesting email from one of our listeners. Marla writes, Dear Bob and Joseph, I just finished reading the story to which I am sending the link now. It highlights the ways in which Ukrainians have been resourceful in combating the Russian invasion, which Joseph has reported on so well. The people are amazing, and they are creating a society that is worth defending. Slava Ukraini, thank you for your daily conversations. Best regards, Marla. And she sends a story out of Odessa, and basically it's the headline is, Ukrainian engineers, historians, and housewives are keeping Putin on his toes. And it goes into how volunteers everywhere are helping in all sorts of ways, and they're learning on the go by trial and error, Joseph.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, there was no playbook for this. And I was talking with people recently this week about those Ukrainians who lived in Kherson City while it was occupied, and how even babushkas, you know, grandmas were going to rooftops and sending secret signals to inform Ukrainian informants about where, you know, the Russian troop movements in the occupied city. Some of these, some, you know, the older people might remember some of these things from the days of the Soviets. If you wanted to be free, you had to live underground. But yeah, this has been 11 months of adapting, and that's why, I mean, when I talk with people that I haven't spoken with since, you know, the beginning of the war, I think we've all changed so much. Everyone has adapted so much because you have to. And yeah, it's adapting because you want to survive. And it's, you know, I had this conversation with some IT people, you know, who've always been in the innovation business here in Ukraine. And they said, you know, a strange upside of this is if you have an idea now, you can approach anyone in a cafe or on the street, and people are willing to listen to your idea and to collaborate and work together. So it really has unlocked, despite all the fatigue, there really is a new energy of, hey, let's build things together for victory and for success.
Yeah, this story I mentioned talks about, well, let me just read a couple of sentences here. During long hours spent in bomb shelters, women weave camouflage nets by tying together fabric scraps for use as covers for tanks and other vehicles and soldiers. It's truly amazing. And if you want to check out that story, it's available at newyorktimes.com/opinion/Ukraine war. Pretty amazing stuff, Joe.
Yeah, it's. I mean, this is when there is tiredness. It's exactly these things that keep people going, and that's. I mean, I was another foreign reporter asked, you know, if it was safe to come to Ukraine, and that's the whole other question. But I said, the one thing, everyone that comes here from the outside, they leave re-energized by this the sense of cooperation and collaboration here, and so it's as I've said before, it's kind of like the best self-help book you could imagine.
Exactly. Well, I hope you have a peaceful 24 hours until we talk tomorrow. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Bob.